Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday, the 14th of September. Listening to some great Toy Story music created by the wonderful, the incredible Randy Newman, who was a guest on our program yesterday. He's going to be appearing at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Saturday, and we still haven't gotten enough of him. So we're going to play all Randy Newman music throughout the panel this morning.
It's a great interview.
Your interview is so good. If people didn't hear it, go back online and listen.
WAMC.org/roundtable. I owe you $8. Thank you for doing
it. But even at the end, you could tell how much he enjoyed it.
It was really fun.
He really enjoyed it.
We had a blast. I can't wait to see the show, and he's going to be we didn't even really get into the film stuff, so we're going to play some of the music this morning because it's just really, really good. So maybe
I should go see the show.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, excellent. I'm sure the folks at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall wouldn't mind one a little bit. Let me introduce the panel to you. We're very, very excited. We've got some people here who have not been here in a while, and I'm thrilled that they're here. You know, Alan is away. Alan will be back next week, though. But we are thrilled. So I talked to him yesterday. He's doing well, so can't wait to get back. However, let me introduce to the people who are actually in the room this morning. Daily Freeman publisher Ira Fussfeld is back. Hello, sir. We missed you more than words can say.
Thank you very much. You know, I had a little surgery, and the station proved to be a great elixir on two levels. One, it was always informative and entertaining to listen to the panel. And then the other one was, and when you're fortunate enough to be on this show, and I'm also on the media project, I find myself talking back to the radio because of some of the things I hear. And the more I was talking back to Alan's thing, the things that I disagreed with, the faster I healed. So I had to get back faster as a result.
Well, that's good. We're thrilled you're back. So are you now partly bionic?
I am partly by not my right hip. I feel like it's fair for me, even at my age, to say I'm hip.
Well, we knew you were hip. We always knew that.
Well, some people said hippo.
Yes, but I told you he's away. Siena College professor of political science Vera Acarius Kelly is with us. We're thrilled that she is back. Thank you very much. We love having you here.
Well, thank you so much. I'm excited to be back. And as always, I promise to bring in a comparative or maybe international perspective on things.
Okay, what does that mean when you say like comparative? I think I'm a dummy on this. So a political science. So you'll have like a political, we can talk about a political story, but then comparative meaning.
So what I teach is an introduction to comparative politics course. So we look at different countries and how they address taxes or healthcare issues. I also teach Middle East and Latin American politics and look at domestic issues there. So just to broaden students' horizons about what is happening in the world and think about how maybe we don't have all the answers. There might be ideas out there in the world that actually could work for us as well, or at least we could look and compare to see how other countries handle controversial issues or difficult problems.
So to give it great context, to put it into a context,
yes,
in a world perspective, mm-hmm, and to give it greater meaning.
Yes.
Well, by God, we're certainly trying to do that. Yeah,
seems,
show, aren't
seems
we?
Like something the current administration would have no interest in.
They're all, that is all over that.
The okay, current so now, administration is not interested.
Not interested.
So,
no.
We are.
I have dozens of questions about Mexico, about Syria. You know, where
save
do we
them
start?
For the show. Save them for the show.
I'm so excited to have her on.
Communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is here. And Teresa, thank you. It's always lovely to have you here.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
All right. So let's get started. A reminder, you can join us and share your thoughts, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we would love to hear from you. Okay, so there's this meeting last night.
Chinese food.
Yeah, there's a meeting last night at the White House, and which may or may not, we don't exactly completely know what happened, but President Trump met with Democratic leaders, and then the Democratic leaders came out. They reported a deal on Dreamers, and he said that apparently they have come to some agreement on DACA.
Meaning Schumer.
Schumer came out, and Pelosi too, correct?
Right.
Yeah,
yes.
And they both came out and they said—
Not Trump.
No. Trump denies it. Trump tweeted this morning, and I guess even last night, right, that there was really nothing there. And this, of course, came after statements from many Republicans criticizing him for deal-making with the Democrats again for the second time. Oh, my God. Second time in 2 weeks. So this is one of those Donald Trump stories which is contradictory, and we don't quite know what to make of it. As we know, the Democrats, they had their dinner. And they had one impression. Apparently, the president has another impression, and then you don't know what to make of it all when you get out of the when you look at it this morning. Any idea?
Well, like we start. I start every analysis of a Trump event as I don't believe a word he said. So we don't know whether he had a deal or not. Although last night he was tweeting indications of a deal, and the denials started coming this morning, perhaps as the outrage from the base and some of the talk show people started registering on him. But I suspect that the first report was accurate, that they did sort of have a deal. He wants to make a deal. It was widely reported how pleased he was with the press he received after the deal on, I don't even remember what it was anymore, the last deal where he...
The budget ceiling.
Mm-hmm. So, I think one of the bones of contention that he was whether or not he agreed to bag the wall, and he quickly said that's not mm-hmm. that wasn't part of any deal. So.
The Democrats, just to clarify this, the Democrats came out and said that they had a deal with the president to extend protections for young undocumented immigrants and to finalize a border security package that does not include the president's proposed wall. That, according to the statement made by Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, saying that they had a very productive, quote, very productive dinner meeting with the president of the United States that focused on DACA.
And that was consistent with earlier in the day, Trump had met with a bipartisan group of primarily House members. And when they came out and talked, one of the things that they said is not an overall deal on DACA, but they indicated that there was an agreement to separate funding for the wall and a deal on DACA, and that they would pursue both, but they would do it separately. And so the Schumer-Pelosi announcement was consistent with that. But then it appears that there was tremendous blowback from Breitbart, from Fox News, and from his right wing. And so Sarah Huckabee Sanders last night tweeted out, no deal. And then this morning, Trump started on a whole series of tweets.
On another note, I also think it may have been a strategic error for Schumer and Pelosi to actually release that statement and call it a deal. If they had mentioned the word framework or, having some overlap in a conversation over dinner, maybe the backlash wouldn't have been so harsh. It seems that Trump owns the word deal, and he wants to announce what a deal might look like, and he wants to be in control. So just from a strategic perspective, this sort of exploded overnight.
Well, I agree with that, but I do think that Schumer and Pelosi had wanted to get out ahead of it because they also have a base was concerned with the last deal that they made.
Yes. Well, and just in in practical politics in Trump America, it seems like it would be a good idea to announce it so maybe it wouldn't change before you got back to the office.
This goes back to where I started, that you can't believe anything he says.
Right.
This time we're talking about DACA students and young people.
Yes.
And you know what? It's beyond politics. We're talking about 800,000 people who are an excellent group to help support and give them a path towards legalization in this country that is permanent. So playing politics with this particular group, I find very tragic, and disturbing.
But I think what they being Schumer and Pelosi, were trying to do is exactly deal with that issue, force some clarity, because up to this point, Donald Trump has been able to play both sides of the issue. And if you are a DACA person, what do you believe? And we've talked about this before. Do you believe Trump's ever-changing rhetoric, or do you believe what the Justice Department is putting out, which is directives to leave? Right. Do you believe what Homeland Security is putting out, which is directives to leave? Or do you believe the ever-changing rhetoric? So what DACA folks most need is some clarity, and I think Pelosi and Schumer did a good job of trying to force his hand on this because he's playing both sides of the issue.
He is. However, if you're a DACA recipient, you have clarity. You know President Trump has not been supportive. You know it.
But
that
he loves
is your
them.
Experience. Well, he says a lot of things, but it is the Attorney General
yeah,
who announced what
out.
The status yeah, is of DACA well, students and young people.
Well, he also is reading the numbers. And the DACA, the number of people in this country who support deporting DACA the Dreamers is very low, even lower than Trump's numbers. So he can read. He, as I said before, he was excited with the level of the favorable press he received after this deal he made with mm-hmm. Schumer and Pelosi on the debt level, etc. Yeah. So I think he was reveling in that, and he sees that mm-hmm. the Republicans are not. He can't get the Republicans
right.
to do the deal with them. So he's only interested in doing a deal.
And again, you have to. The problem with Trump is rhetoric is not legislation, is not law. On health care, you know, repeal and replace. All rhetoric, no legislation. On taxes, we see the same thing. All rhetoric, no legislation. On DACA now, same thing. All rhetoric, no legislation, inconsistent. And even his tweets this morning were inconsistent because he's trying to stabilize his base, and then he's trying to, you know, you can't have it both ways. You can't, on the one hand, say, I'm going to send them all out of here and keep his campaign promise was they're all going. They're all going, and if they come back, they come back, but they're all going. And that was his campaign promise, and that's what his base wants to hold him to. That's what the Fox folks and Breitbart want to hold him to. And was it Stephen King of Iowa last night was just
who's not one of the heavier thinkers in the
but
Congress,
he was so. Rabid on this last night.
Mm-hmm. But how does he, does that number, does that group of people, we talk a lot about his base, it's still a relatively small number of people. They're the loudest. Breitbart mm-hmm. is loud. Certainly Fox News and Hannity are loud. But I don't know that should be and will be a determinative factor.
But that's the core that they have to hold. Now, I'm not big on polling, as you know, but there were polls out last night, though, that showed some of his base were squishy on this issue, that they weren't certain that they all needed to leave, that they didn't understand how that was going to happen and that
right.
the high cost of moving people and such. But again, mm-hmm. You can see in his inconsistent quotes, tweets this morning, how he's trying to be on all, you know, we're already building the wall. He's, you know, the wall, which is already under construction in the form of new renovation of old and existing fences and walls will continue to be built. No deal made last night on DACA. And then separately, does anybody really want to throw out good, educated, accomplished young people who have jobs, some serving in the military, really?
Mm-hmm. The question is about, I mean, there's nothing surprising about anything that happened between last night and this morning.
Right.
This
right.
is what Trump always
his
does.
His words mean nothing.
And his right. words mean nothing.
It's a game show.
And it is exactly right. And I think, actually, I'm not so sure his base is the same as Breitbart and, you know, our network TV shows. His base is also moving around, you know. I think they are absolutely focused on jobs and economic development ideas. I don't think they necessarily care that much about the wall. I think that is a red herring.
Oh, really? I mean, it seemed like that was the one of the issues. But the other thing, and I just want to go back to something Teresa said, and then you can go.
Ask
I promise.
Her a question.
Okay, you can. I'm sure.
I want to ask her a million questions.
but I also think you were saying you can't have it both ways, and I think the other thing you can't have it on both ways is to come out and in the statement that was muted, much more muted than the Democratic statement from the White House, said a positive step toward the president's strong commitment to bipartisan solutions. Well, you can't can't have that and then turn around and say, well, we're going to work with – I don't know. That's difficult if you're going to then appeal to your base and then say, okay, we're going to work almost, at least in the last 2 weeks, more with Democrats than Republicans.
And I think part of the problem here is a Chauncey Gardner president, and we're analyzing it as if he has a deep understanding of policy and process and how it all works. And
Peter Sellers being there, we keep getting letters after we use that reference. No, it's not your fault. I would assume everyone has seen the movie.
If you haven't,
go watch
Being There. We're living it right now.
One of the great movies.
Right. Yeah.
But on this, the problem with talking bipartisanship is you actually have to be bipartisan and actually have to make deals and you have to actually compromise. And if you compromise, then people at the edges of your base are not going to be happy. And so that's what he has to understand, that if he compromises on DACA, then because he spent a year and a half saying, we're going to throw these people out, we're going to throw them out, we're going to build them a wall. And I think he did that. The underlying issue, particularly if you listen to the Bannon interview, it's a reminder that they use the wall as a symbol of, you know, those people are taking your jobs. You are economically insecure because of those people. They created a very ugly them and us thing.
So we have to go to a break here. But let me just ask this question, because we keep on talking about the self-inflicted crises that this president causes just for himself. Before he sends out Jeff Sessions 2 weeks ago to talk about this plan being completely upended, why not go and say these things prior to that and just save us from this whole back and forth and complete misunderstanding?
Because he doesn't have depth on policy and how it works, and as long as the focus is on him, he doesn't care if it's negative or positive. As long as it's on him, he's episodic. He, you know, like yesterday, it seemed like, okay, we're changing the station. We're going to move to a different show. You know, he shifted to a different show yesterday,
right,
the bipartisan show.
We got to shift to a different show, and then we'll be right back. I promise, we'll do that, and we'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. Listening to Randy Newman this morning and feeling fine, quite frankly. We've got a wonderful panel, and we have your letters. We welcome them. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Ira Fussfeld is back in the house. Teresa Bourgeois is here, and we're also thrilled to welcome back Siena College Professor of Political Science Vera Acarius Kelly, and thank you all for being with us. I want to just a quick note that there's a very cool event. We had a lot going on this week, and normally we would have had this gentleman in, but there's a Pulitzer Prize winning poet by the name of he won the Pulitzer Prize this year for poetry, and he's doing an event tonight at the New York State Writers Institute. Tayemba Jess is going to be speaking tonight at the New York State Writers Institute. He's going to be doing a book show with us later, but I just wanted to mention the event tonight. That he's doing a seminar at 4:15 in the Uptown Campus Recital Hall, and then a reading at the main theater at 7 o'clock at the Performing Arts Center. And if you have never heard Tayemba Jess before and the incredible work that he does, and the Pulitzer Prize winning work, you really should. It's amazing, and we're blessed in this region to have institutions that bring in Pulitzer Prize winners like Tayemba Jess to talk. So I just wanted to make mention of that. We got some letters, too. Let me start off with those, and then we'll move back into the conversation. Steven writes, are you sure that Roundtable isn't addicting? My wife and I are back in Brooklyn after a long vacation in Big Indian, New York, where we listen to you every morning without fail. We've been feeling terrible since we returned and chalked it up to back to work and vacation blues. But no, it was the missing the roundtable which left us feeling just wrong. Now we're curled up listening with our computer and feeling fantastic.
So nice to hear.
And what a great place Big Indian
sweet.
Is.
Yeah.
Big Indian is in Ulster County, a great place.
And I was just going to say, well, you know, we'll take care of that. You know?
That's right. Yeah. Give us another 10 minutes.
Yeah, give us another 10 minutes and you'll be wanting to uncurl. Dan writes, the buffoon that changed the world by growing up while in office. I can't wait for our president to show the world that he doesn't listen to Republicans or Democrats and is not afraid to be his imperfect self. Go Trump.
It sounds like it could be a Dr. Seuss novel.
It does. It certainly has the makings, does it not? Russ says, President Trump is getting the hang of minority government. Set the legislative agenda with splashy, indefinite proposals, and some faction will find something it thinks it likes. For example, propose a simplified federal income tax code. The debate will then be about how much taxation can be shifted to the states, or cut federal funding for health and safety programs. The question will be how big should the cuts be, unless the opposition comes up with a unified countervailing position, which the Democrats have yet to do. The course of the ship of state will slowly turn hard right. That from Russ.
Well, I mean, I just sort of am confused sometimes by the idea of, you know, requesting the tax plan to move fast when we have no idea what the tax plan looks like. I'm utterly confused by that. That is not something I can sort of even address. I'm wondering where the details are.
Well, now, this was the same thing that went on during the healthcare debate too.
Yes.
It's
uh-huh.
like, okay, well, we're debating this, but what are we debating? What are we talking about? What are we going? So meanwhile, Trump goes all in on a tax overhaul where the details remain unwritten. President Trump is doubling down this week, which I look forward to a time when we can retire that phrase. On his bid to remake the tax code, meeting with Democrats, tying tax legislation to hurricane recovery, and dispatching his economic team to Capitol Hill almost daily to prod lawmakers into action. So do something, do something, do something. And they say, okay, what? What do we do? He's bringing to the game a relatively weak team, a chief economic advisor who he has openly disparaged, and a Treasury secretary whose counsel he has often dismissed, and is promoting quick passage of a new tax code that has yet to be written as members of his party bicker over the details. What could go wrong?
Well, I'm not the first one to say this. A couple of things come to mind with what you just read and what we've already seen for these last 8 months is that Trump seems to have an idea of this administration vis-a-vis Congress that it's sort of like an organizational chart in a private business, and that he's at the top of the chart and the Congress is below him and works for him. And he says, I want tax reform and I want a health care plan and I want infrastructure. Doesn't say how any of this is going to get done. He just says, I wanted something. Mm-hmm. And then when they throws the ball down to the Congress to do. Right now, Congress is unable to do it because of the way the Republicans are at war with each other, many of them. And when nothing is done, he gets mad at Congress. And if something is done, and I'm convinced that this man has no moral core, so that if almost any tax deal, almost any infrastructure deal, almost any health care deal, as long as it has the word deal on it and he can sign it, he can then step back and when he runs for re-election and point to the accomplishments of his administration. Hey, we got health care, we got infrastructure, we got a tax deal. He doesn't know, it appears, or cares, it appears, what's in these plans. He just wants to get these things passed.
Yeah. I just want to say something really quickly. It almost seems like he's already running a new presidential campaign.
Because he already has commercials on the air.
I am shocked to see
that.
Well,
not to mention the rallies.
Yeah.
The rallies, the signs, the commercials.
I'm
thinking,
and these
are
not PAC
commercials.
These are commercials where at the end it says, I'm Donald Trump and I approved of this message.
Yes.
Also, if you look at the members of Congress who he invited to dinner the other night and then to the White House yesterday, if you look at the states where they're from, they're being very, very strategic. They're all key states for him. But on the tax package, Ira, that's one place where they did say from the get-go that they would have a tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
That they were working.
They meaning the
they
Republicans.
Being the Trump administration,
like the Trump
not
administration.
The Congress, but the Trump administration, one place where they said that they would provide a bill. Because in some cases, Democrat and Republican presidents, they say, overall, you know, here's the broad structure. You, Congress, come back with a deal, but these are my parameters. These are my guardrails. But in the case of taxes, they definitively said, the Trump administration said, we're writing a tax bill, and we're going to get that tax bill passed. And they have not put that on the table yet. The reason I think they were slowed down is they were counting on the health care bill to be the repeal and replace of the health care bill. And that would have given them a lot of money to work with because there would have been a lot of savings. When they didn't get that money, they now have a problem that they don't know how to pay for it. Now, the one part of the tax bill, the only part that they've been, that Trump has been very definitive about, is this lowering the tax rate to 15%, and that including LLCs. Interestingly enough, the Tax Policy Center calculates that if, in fact, that change goes into place, then Trump personally saves $125 million in taxes. That's the one part that he's been definitive about, and that's the one part that, with according to the Tax Policy Center, he has an economic stake mm-hmm. in that change.
Mm-hmm. But he also, and I don't disagree with what you just said, you're a self-admitted wonk, and you know this a lot better than I do. But in addition to saying, I want to get a tax plan, he also said, well, I want to get a health care plan, without really having a plan of his own.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think one of the ways that I fault the Democrats and the media is that, and that predated him, the repeal and the replace rhetoric predated him. Mm-hmm. But they were never forced to say, okay, what's in your plan? And to show mm-hmm. that they didn't have internal agreement. And just like they probably don't have internal agreement on a tax plan. And because of the question of how to pay for it. And you saw this in the Reagan era. I was working in Washington in the Reagan era. And read Dave Stockman's book. The problem with the Reagan era taxes, that they passed the tax cuts, but they never passed the portion of how to pay for it. And then it created incredible deficits and economic harm. And so that's the, you know, it's easy to pass the cuts, but then you have to figure out how to pay for it. And how are they going to pay for it? What you know, are they going to close the corporate welfare loopholes?
I also wanted to bring in, I looked up some comparative corporate tax rates, because the argument is always that the U.S. has the highest corporate tax rate among all the
developments. That's a lie that he's been saying for years.
So I actually looked at the OECD data, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which has the highest functioning or most advanced economies in this pool. And so I wanted to bring in just four countries as comparisons. So Germany has a 30% corporate tax, Mexico a 30% corporate tax, Canada 26%, and the UK 19%. Now, the problem is that when we say we have the highest tax corporate tax rate in this country, is also that we don't really look at all the credits and the deductions that are taken. So with all the deductions in comparison, the US is about at 18% right now. The UK is at 18%, Mexico is at 12%, Germany is at 15%, and Canada is at 8.5%. So there are some countries that are lower, but it is not as dramatic as the Trump administration has been making it out to look. So I think we also need to look at some of the comparative data and really think about what he's talking about, explore the details a bit more, the context, and how we pay for changes in the tax plan.
And that's interesting, because yesterday Donald Trump tweeted, China has a business tax rate of 15%. We should do everything possible to match them in order to win with our economy, jobs, and wages. Okay, I'm not an expert, but soon after that, there were a torrent of tweets that said, in fact, that's not true. China's is 25%. Hong Kong is 15%.
Uh-huh.
But China's is 25%. But this is all, you're exactly right, has to be taken into context of, because he says, you know, we need to be able to match other countries and do these trade deals. But what are the real numbers?
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We've got other things to get to. We'll talk about health care as well. Why not?
I haven't heard Teresa say anything about the Red Sox today.
No. Well,
it's amazing how that happens on the days they lose.
How many games are they up
three
for the
games,
Yankees?
Three games. The Red Sox lost yesterday. The Yankees won.
Three games up?
Three games.
How about that?
How about that?
But gotta love
you
the
didn't
Red Sox.
I had to raise it. You didn't raise it.
We'll talk about that too when
okay.
we come back. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, Ira Fussfeld, Vera Acarius-Kelly, and Teresa Bourgeois. We left you just talking a little squabble there about baseball. I do want to, we do want to congratulate the Cleveland Indians.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a great story, too. Set an American League record on Wednesday by winning their 21st consecutive game, 21 straight, and you don't have that unless you go back to the 1935 Chicago Cubs and the 1916 New York Giants.
And the manager of the Cleveland Indians is the manager that the Red Sox didn't want anymore.
That's right. So it's quite a story, and it'll be fascinating to watch. But you like to see those stories.
It is a nice story.
Yeah, it's a great story.
It's in Cleveland's a nice city. It's good for them to get this win. They have a beautiful ballpark, Jacobs Field.
Their last World Series was 48. Did you say that? And I think that's 1948, and I believe they're the longest streak now in
longest
in
suffering
baseball. Yeah.
So we'll see.
This
how
could
they
be
do
there. They missed it by one game last year.
And I like the fact that, you know, Cubs, 35, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Besides the Red Sox, I love the Cubbies.
Well, let's go to some letters. And
your
then,
team, Joe?
They have a rookie who looks pretty good.
I have to say, this is when you know, my team, the Philadelphia Phillies, growing up in Philadelphia, so this is when you know that your team is doing great, when you get an email saying that you can go to every game for the rest of the season for $50.
Is that what you're doing? And all the tasty cake you can
well,
eat.
Well, pretty much, you know.
But isn't
like,
that? But that would. Yeah, I know it's.
Well,
because
I know
you're not
if
doing,
I hey, if I lived
great,
in Philly,
though,
I would be there. But yeah.
They have to open the park. They may as well try to sell some hot dogs.
That's right. Give it a shot. Get somebody in there.
Yeah. The downside of Major League Ball now is it's just too expensive for a family to go to. It's really sad. But yeah. But not if you're a Phillies fan.
Well, no, not if they suck. You can go to as many games as you want. Fred writes to us and
Hi,
says,
Fred.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Hi. Tomorrow, my husband becomes a U.S. naturalized citizen.
Wow.
Cool.
That's
very cool.
Very nice.
Fantastic.
The process, 18 years, began with a sibling sponsorship, then asylum, and finally, our marriage. Yay! Hmm. So what is a naturalized citizen? If these folks aren't the epitome of such, what does it take?
The dreamers, I presume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a fair question.
Right.
It is.
And the sad thing is that he used them and others to heed Trump, denigrating them for, you know, a year and a half for his political purposes, and use them to divide the country, and them and others. And it's really it's not who we are as a country, but I guess it is right now.
Lisa writes an email with the subject line, DACA must go. I had the unfortunate experience of spending time with Trump's base, and oh my God, there will be a revolution if they lose Trump. They are angry. They want the dreamers out. They want a wall, hate the media and liberal education. They even believe that the reason they aren't teaching cursive in schools anymore is because they don't want the children to know how to read the original documents, like the Constitution that was written in cursive. That according to Lisa in Montgomery. Hmm. Martin writes to us, Trump made a political miscalculation with DACA. He wanted to motivate his base by coming out and saying he was ending it. That worked. But he also tried to double dip and get the positive media response to deal to a deal preserving it. I imagine if he never came out and said he was ending DACA, the deal he reached last night, which preserves the status quo on DACA but gets increased funding for border security, would have been received much differently by his base. From the conservative point of view, it actually sounds like a good deal.
Yeah, I don't think you trade people for a wall, but... And I think that's what the Democrats are trying to separate, the idea of trading people for a wall. Democrats support border security as well, but that's different than the wall.
Richard puts it into context and says, hello, panel.
Hello.
Behind everything, the Russia inquiry looms. I believe it drives every PR stunt, diversion, and tweet coming out of Trump and company.
Well, he might be right.
Yeah. Shiny objects. Keep throwing out those shiny objects to distract from the news.
The other Russ checks in and says, how long are we going to let this guy continue to roll his marbles and our country? Well, I think we...
3 years.
3 years. Yeah, 4 months.
Sadly.
But a lot can happen if he is, in fact, going to start dealing with the Democrats and he starts having, things that he can show on his notches that he succeeded And we don't know who the Democrats are going to run against him. I mean, it's abhorrent for many of us to think about him being reelected. But as someone who never thought he'd be elected in the first place, I'm not willing to say there's no way he's going to get reelected.
I'm with you on that. I fear greatly.
Right. And you heard Senator Manchin met with him yesterday from West Virginia, and he came out. He was doing an interview last night with Charlie Rose and talking about how great it is to be invited to the White House and to have your, you know, to be heard and to be able to provide input, a Democratic senator. And you saw Congressman Peter Welch and Congressman Tom Suozzi, Peter Welch from Vermont and Tom Suozzi from New York, coming out of the White House yesterday talking about how great the bipartisanship, how they really liked what they heard. He was really interested in tax policy. Now, just at the end of their White House talk, they said, oh, but we still have to figure out what the details are. The devils are in the details. But I'm, the White House couldn't have asked for better. And frankly, okay, great. If the president is really serious about bipartisanship, President Obama tried to get the Republicans to work with him for 8 years. How did that go?
Yeah. And is it outside the realm of possibility that if the Republicans decide that Trump is no longer worthy of their support, that there become a third party, that Trump will run on as a third party candidate, and with that 35% base of support succeed?
I would say we have to actually look at the economy and see what happens. I think Florida will be possibly one of those testing grounds now, because Florida obviously had horrendous devastation, and there's going to be a need to rebuild and address all these infrastructure issues, as well as the citrus industry is in big trouble now. So that those kinds of questions could be the turning point, because it is about improving the economy and promises for big projects that get jobs into certain areas of the country. So in addition, people are in many countries, you probably saw that there was a dip in the European stock market. As soon as there's a discussion on the tax plan or other sort of economic plans for
trade agreements,
anything like that. And so what we have to see is if we in fact we seem to have a bubble in the stock market. There might be some adjustments in the coming months or the coming year, and that alone could determine what our future looks like in terms of the political parties and who's running and who might get support.
So Secretary of State Tillerson is headed to Mexico on an apology tour because the President Trump didn't acknowledge the earthquake or whatever, the offer for help.
Right.
How do you, from your point of view, how does Mexico see all of this?
Well, Mexico has a lot of internal problems, too. Mexico's president is not terribly popular in Mexico. But he has been able to unite a lot of the political energy behind him in a way because Trump has been so hostile to Mexico. However, it is ironic that Tillerson is in Mexico trying to explain away some of the commentary from Trump. What we will see in Mexico is a lot of resistance to changing NAFTA the way, as well as Canada, in terms of the way Trump envisions NAFTA to look like. Mostly beneficial to the U.S., not so beneficial to Canada and Mexico. We also have to remember that Canada is our, I think, number two trading partner, Mexico our number three trading partner in the world. So it's not that easy. Surprise, like so many other things, it's not so easy to just...
I mean, not like
healthcare. Renegotiate and find people to support you on particular plans. There are details to be figured out. So the Mexican population is outraged.
And Texas is
Trump.
Mexico is Texas's top trading partner, and they need an economic recovery. One of the things I wondered about too, with the proposed changes in NAFTA, ironically, if Trump succeeds in weakening or getting out of NAFTA, and the economy in Mexico gets worse, then that will increase the number of immigrants, pressure on immigrants coming into the U.S.
No doubt about it. It's counterproductive, because what you want is a churning economy in Mexico, employment in Mexico, future opportunities inside of the country so that people stay.
An economic wall rather than a physical wall.
Yes. And also Mexico is already looking towards the European Union. If, in fact, the NAFTA negotiations fall apart and there are real dilemmas emerging, I think Mexico is looking to maybe increase its arrangements with Germany.
And what about their turn to China and Russia?
I have to hold you there.
Too many questions for her.
That's okay. That's right. You can ask him during the break, too. Otherwise, look, see, Ray Graff, his head will just explode. It'll go right off.
He's so excited about the Red Sox.
No, he was watching the Mets last night. Are they still scoring the runs? The Cubs had 17 runs last night.
The news from Ed McMahon.
Ray Graff will have the newscast. We'll return and continue our discussion after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. We're listening to Randy Newman's music, mostly from Pixar movies, I think almost exclusively from Pixar movies. And Randy Newman is going to be at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on the 16th, troymusichall.org, and we're happy about that. So we're playing music to celebrate, just so you know. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. 7 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Thursday morning, the 14th of September. Let me reintroduce the panel to you. Teresa Bourgeois is here, communications consultant to the stars. Vera Acarias-Kelly is with us. She is a professor at Siena College and a political science professor. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Kingston Freeman. He has been away on the disabled list for a while. He is back with us, and we are thrilled that he is here, and we are enjoying everyone's company this morning. We welcome you to write in and hear what you have to say. panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Here are some letters. We get this one from Michael, who said, "Dear panel, I demand a full-throated apology from Teresa on behalf of her blessed Red Sox. Cheaters! Cheaters, cheaters, cheaters. If they take the division from the Yankees, it will be because they are cheaters. We should demand an independent counsel. Sad. Hashtag sad.
Hashtag Yankee fan.
The Red Sox have managed to do something.
Hashtag
that,
Yankee
the Red
fan.
Sox have managed to do something that I didn't think that was possible, is that they have become a less likable franchise than the evil empire. Yeah, the makeup of the team and the specter of this cheating scandal. There's a whole vibe in the around the Red Sox and the Patriots.
But I was going to say,
you are
don't
way
you think
too
they're
close to New York
yeah.
City and those
no,
Yankee
I,
fans,
I tell you,
Ira.
I don't follow it
so
nearly
I,
as closely
don't blame
as
the
I
New
used
England
to.
Patriots.
So
stuff
I have a
on
proposal. Who's the guy again that runs Trump's voter fraud campaign in New Hampshire?
Well, I can't
he should
his
be
name,
redirected
yeah.
to this
right.
particular, you know, inquiry. I think he would find some interesting opportunities.
Trump goes to Yankee games with Bill O'Reilly, and they have milkshakes and do the wave. So you
and
right.
Trump and Brady are friends. They're not friends. They are friends. They're not friends.
No, they,
Stop maligning my Red Sox.
Trump is very close with Robert Kraft.
Well, I think,
you whiners, because the Yankees aren't doing so
okay,
well.
I
you
don't
have to find. No, I'm
personally,
not
don't
at
care
you.
About the Yankees, but I do have to say. I say this as a Patriots fan. I do think Ira is absolutely correct that a lot of the bitterness that's coming down is not so much directly at the Red Sox as much as it is the New England sports teams.
Yeah, Dan right. Shaughnessy of the Globe wrote a column about this a week or so ago,
yeah.
saying to New England fans, "Sorry to tell you this, but this is our reputation now."
Yeah.
Well, I just, you know, who cares about. Oh.
Okay, there you go.
Well,
guess right.
Let's go Red Sox.
Steve writes in. He's a Michigander.
Michigander.
A Michigander?
Michigander.
Yep. Okay, a Michigander. And he is proud. I'm so proud my Detroit Tigers played a major role in this achievement on the Cleveland record.
That's, you know, they got a nice team out there. I used to spend a lot of time in Michigan.
You know, we used to go down in spring training and watch and stay in Lakeland there and watch spring training and just stay and just watch Detroit baseball.
Is that Joker Merchant Field?
Joker Merchant Field. Very good, Ira. Very good.
I know more stuff
with Al Kaline.
No, right.
Al Kaline,
that's a ways
there
back.
You go.
Yeah. Well, but he has a spot, right? A spot right there, and is always there. So, but it's great. It's really, really cool. And anyway,
they've taken over the long-suffering mantle from the Cubs and the Red Sox. But
here we go.
Nice stadium, nice team, nice city.
Karen writes in, since you have a political science professor on the panel today, I have a question.
Uh-oh.
I wish Bernie Sanders would run as a third-party candidate and be done with it. First of all, he's an independent, so why does he even want to run as a Democrat? This way, people like me, who have been registered Democrats for many years and who voted for Hillary in 2016, can pick from candidates who are more closely aligned with our ideas. I really think most people in the U.S. are moderates at the end of the day, wondering what your opinion is on this as a political science scientist.
So full disclosure, my area of expertise is international politics, not domestic U.S. However, I agree most Americans are more interested in sort of centrist policies or politics. And I think Bernie right now is attempting to figure out if he should run, how he should run. I think this sort of single-payer healthcare proposal is all about trying to figure out if he has a future as a potential presidential candidate within the Democrats or third party.
Don't get me going.
All right, I'm gonna.
You want me to get
going?
No. The
Greg
letters
writes,
will come.
It seems like President Trump is running for 2020 because he is. He set up a campaign committee right after he was inaugurated on Inauguration Day, we should note. The rallies and the ads have been paid for from the campaign fund. Trump has fully embraced the permanent campaign. Daisy says, and what will these corporate tax cuts mean? Higher wages for the ordinary workers? If that were the case, it might be worth it. But let's face it, this would be a windfall for corporate coffers, executives, and stockholders.
They didn't raise wages last time they had the corporate cuts.
See, I'm still not convinced, contrary to what I indicated before about him, he's already running and he's got commercials on the air and all, third party and all that stuff. But it is a long time to go. And I'm not 100% convinced that he wants to be president after this term. He's achieved it. He's so far, it's not working out so well for him.
What do you mean it's not working out well? Economically, for his personal economy, it's working out great.
It depends. I mean, his brand, has his brand been helped? That you see so many events that have been canceled at the hotels and at the golf courses. I don't know. I mean, we'll see is what we're saying. But I do think that that is another box that needs to be checked. He's achieved this. If he figured out a way to get out without it making look like he's doing it because he knows he can't win or those guys, he'll come up with some reason. I've done my part for my country and now I'm going to go to Mar-a-Lago and play golf all the time. Do I think that that will happen? I think it's a possibility. I wouldn't say it's an odds-on possibility, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, indeed the focus should be on him. I think we have to turn it back to the focus on the country. And I think the basic norms of our governing are under attack. The basic tenets of our democracy are under attack. Remember that there is still an investigation. You saw this information yesterday about General Flynn and his son. You know, more news on them. Back in attention. And I think he is running. He's running hard. I think he loves the publicity. I think it's been lucrative for his company. But I think it's a real problem for the country.
Well, he has. As I said, he's lost a lot of outings at golf courses. You know, there are people I know who might have the money and who will absolutely not stay at a Trump hotel or play golf at a Trump course. And there was David Farenthal of the Washington Post had a laundry list of charity events that were canceled at Mar-a-Lago because they didn't want to go there anymore. Now that may be just a tiny part of his empire, this is a question where some publicity is bad publicity. I used to say, as long as you spell my name right, keep using my name.
I mean, look at the profit they made on the hats that they wore to, everybody focused on Melania's shoes that they wore to the Hurricane Irma in Texas. Harvey in Texas. Sorry about that. I wasn't concerned about the shoes, but the hats. They wore hats that later on showed up on his campaign website, and they made a ton of money selling those hats for the campaign. That's not as personal. That's campaign. But you know, look at all the personal money they're making from the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C.
He's not oblivious. As much as we make fun of his brain power, he's not oblivious to how unpopular he is in the country.
I don't think he cares.
Well, if he doesn't care, how do
he
you,
want
you know?
Anyone.
It's sort of like a suicide bomber. How do you fight against a suicide bomber? If the guy doesn't care that he is, I said to my granddaughter who's 12, I said, you know, Elizabeth, when you have grandchildren, you'll be able to say that you were a young lady during the presidency of the worst president in the history of the country. I mean, does he want that kind of tag to follow him through the rest of his life? Does he want the first paragraph of his obituary to say Donald Trump, who is a self-made billionaire who became president, the worst president in the history of the United States?
He's achieving a lot of what he wanted to achieve. First of all, he won. And second of all, he's dismantling the EPA.
And he's the most unpopular president in the history of the country.
He doesn't matter. He's dismantling the interior. Look at what he's doing to the Interior Department. He's dismantling the Interior Department.
And as we talked about at the beginning of the show, that you admitted has a shot of
oh, that's right.
Winning re-election.
That's what's interesting about the whole thing. He's extremely unpopular, yet he could get re-elected. Mm-hmm. He's extremely unpopular, and his brand is hurting, but he's making money on hats.
He's making a ton of money on his D.C. hotel. He's making money. You know, he just did a big deal personally with China. Anyway, healthcare.
I want to do a feel-good story, if you don't mind. We have a few minutes, so let's do that. Martin Scorsese is in jail.
That's a feel-good story.
Hey, he's behind bars. I'm happy. Federal judge on Wednesday revoked the $5 million bail of Martin Scorsese, the infamous former hedge fund manager convicted of defrauding investors after prosecutors complained that his out-of-court antics posed a danger to the community. While awaiting sentencing, as if he didn't have enough reasons to hate this person, wait, there's more. Scorsese had harassed women online, prosecutors argued, and even offered his Facebook followers $5,000 to grab a strand of Hillary Clinton's hair during her book tour. Scorsese, who faces up to 20 years in prison for securities fraud, apologized in writing, saying that he did not expect anyone to take his online comments seriously, and his attorney pleaded with the judge Wednesday to give him another chance. The fact he continues to remain unaware of the inappropriateness of his actions or words demonstrates to me that he may be creating ongoing risk to the community, according to the U.S. District Judge, in revoking his bond. He is now been taken into custody, and by early Thursday morning, he had been assigned an inmate number at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn.
Well, shall we describe the man as a misogynist, an abuser, self-absorbed lunatic? He really is brutal in terms of his attitude, his positions, his behavior, and to sort of, you know, post something like that on Facebook is simply an outrage.
Well, especially when you're ready to go to prison anyway, right? You're waiting to be sentenced. You would think you would just get ready for that.
Well, he apparently believes because he's wealthy, he's above the law.
Yeah.
And maybe he just sort of feels, you know, he's a man with money, therefore he can do anything.
I just have to note his defense attorney, what his comment was.
It's Benjamin Brofman, who defends a lot of high-profile people.
Stupid doesn't make you violent.
Right.
Adding that his client's Facebook post had shown immaturity, satire, and a warped sense of humor. But I love that defense. Stupid doesn't make you violent. Anyway, there's something deeply troubled about
this. The lawyer compared what Shrelly did to what Kathy Griffin did and said she was not sent to jail for holding up a severed head of Trump.
But she was also not awaiting sentencing.
Yeah, right. And she did not escape unscathed either.
Well, his behavior, truly though, he just does seem disturbed. His behavior in court was odd, his facial expressions, his actions, they all seem the actions of somebody who's just more than satiric, you know, just
something. Yeah, he seems out of control in terms of managing his emotions or his behavior, and so there might be something going on with him that we are not informed about at this point.
Okay, so let's move on. We'll go to other stories, and as soon as I can bring it up, there we go. You wanted to talk about healthcare, right?
Yeah, we're going to
talk about healthcare. So the Medicaid for All or state control healthcare plans go to extremes.
Medicare for All.
Medicare for All. My apologies. In one Senate office building, some of the leading lights of the Democratic Party gathered Wednesday to embrace what was once a proposal only the far left, a huge expansion of Medicare, large enough to open the popular government-run health program to all Americans. In another Senate office building, a smaller but equally adamant group of Republican senators stood together to take one last stab at dismantling the Affordable Care Act. They proposed instead to send each state a lump sum of federal money along with sweeping new discretion over how to use it. So you have these competing plans, and you also have, I think it's worth noting, that Steve Bannon in the Charlie Rose interview on 60 Minutes on Sunday talked about that this idea of repeal and replace is probably dead, but there are ways that he even admitted of improving the system that we have, meaning Obamacare.
So my concern here is that the Trump administration is trying as hard as they can in as many different ways as they can administratively to destroy the Affordable Care Act. And they are doing it by shortening the time that you can sign up, by cutting by 90% the budget for outreach and education, by not paying the insurers in a timely way. He admittedly is trying to destroy the program. But you have a group of Republicans and Democrats quietly, methodically working together in a bipartisan way in the House and the Senate, trying to figure out a way to shore up the system to protect the health care coverage of millions of Americans. And they have just a couple of months to get that done and get it right so that beginning in January, people have access to health care. So into that atmosphere, they started hearings last week, they heard from the governors, they heard from state insurance commissioners, they had other hearings this week, and they're making progress, and the governors are with them on this. And into that mix, you add the Bernie proposal for Medicare for All that has no chance of passing now. And my concern is not that it shouldn't be on the table at some point, but I think the timing is very potentially damaging to this effort to build bipartisan support that we need in the short term to make sure that in the short term people have health care coverage.
We have 14 seconds. Who would like to use that up in responding to Teresa?
I think they've set up the potential for a compromise if people are willing to compromise.
We do need a compromise. Yeah. That's for sure. And going with extreme notions at this point is not what I think is going to work out. So we have to look for the middle.
And Bernie denigrated the Obamacare in the process.
Oh, you're going to get that in, aren't you? Teresa Bourgeois.
I'm curious about it, frankly. I'm holding back, but it just makes me crazy.
Vera Carias-Kelly and Ira Fussfeld, thank you all for being with us. A great panel, and thank you for showing up. I appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow with another panel and another great grouping. I believe we have Malcolm Nance and Judith Henk tomorrow and Joe Bonilla, so it should be a lively panel as well. We will be back with more Roundtable after this.